It is Wednesday, November 15th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, Zimbabwe's president is confined to home following action by the country's military. U.S. Attorney General Jeff Sessions testifies to Congress about President Donald Trump's 2016 campaign and links to Russia.
When you say, "I don't remember anything," the problem is that you don't really have the ability to come back and say, "Oh, but I remember this."
And singer Charlie Puth's latest single generates buzz. It's all ahead. South African President Jacob Zuma says longtime Zimbabwean leader Robert Mugabe is confined to his home in what appears to be a military-backed effort to oust him after 37 years in power. Zuma said in a statement that he spoke early Wednesday to Mugabe, who indicated that he was confined to his home but said that he was fine. The Zimbabwean military appears to be in control of the nation ruled by the 93-year-old Mugabe since 1980, although insists its action is not a coup. Military vehicles and soldiers block roads outside government offices in the capital, Harare. The army also seized a state television station. Major General Espy Moyo, addressing the nation, said Mugabe and his family are safe and their security is guaranteed.
"We are only targeting criminals around him who are committing crimes that are causing social and economic suffering in the country in order to bring them to justice. As soon as we have accomplished our mission, we expect that the situation will return to normalcy. To both our people and the world beyond our borders, we wish to make it abundantly clear that this is not a military takeover of government."
The military action followed a rare public dispute between the ruling ZANU-PF party and Army Chief General Constantino Chiwenga, who Monday denounced what he called a purge of independence fighters, including Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa, from government and threatened intervention. The party criticized the general for treasonable conduct. Mnangagwa's removal appeared to clear the way for Mugabe's wife, Grace, to succeed her husband. John Campbell is a senior fellow and expert on Africa at the Council on Foreign Relations. He tells International Edition's Victor Beatty, Mugabe will likely remain as a figurehead while his wife and her allies could be marginalized or perhaps jailed.
One of the things the Zimbabwean army has always made very clear is that the government of Zimbabwe must be conducted by those that participated in the liberation struggle. Mugabe's wife was about 15 when the country became independent, so obviously she doesn't qualify. Younger people who are associated with her also obviously don't qualify. So I think what's going on, amongst other things, is that those that participated in the liberation struggle are making it quite clear that they're not prepared to relinquish power.
And last week's sacking of the vice president was perhaps the tipping point?
I wouldn't be surprised. The latest report I have seen is that the vice president is presently in South Africa. Who knows who has actually orchestrated this? It's very striking, I think, though, that when the head of the army held his press conference, he was accompanied by 90 senior military officers. That's a lot.
Here's what one news account says. Grace Mugabe's rise in Zimbabwe has brought her into conflict with the independence-era war veterans who enjoyed privileged status in Zimbabwe until the last 2 years when they spearheaded criticism of Mr. Mugabe's handling of the economy.
The Zimbabwe economy has been a mess for the past decade or so. Essentially, the modern economy, which had been based on agriculture, was destroyed with the expulsion of all the whites. Consequence, unemployment is sky high, the value of the currency has plummeted, economic activity has largely ground to a halt, and large numbers of Zimbabweans, we have no idea how many, have left the country either for South Africa or for Zambia or for wherever they can go.
Is the Mugabe era in Zimbabwe near the end, do you think?
Yes. I think it is, and the form that we have known it.
But the ZANU-PF party probably will remain in power?
Yes, because it incorporates virtually everybody, that is to say, the entire elite, including the military. So yes, I think the party will continue.
That's John Campbell of the Council on Foreign Relations. South Africa said it's opposed to any unconstitutional changes of government. Zimbabwe's opposition movement for democratic change has called for a peaceful return to constitutional democracy. The head of the country's War Veterans Association praised what he called a bloodless correction of a gross abuse of power. Chris Mutsvangwa predicted the army would return Zimbabwe to a genuine democracy and make the country a modern model nation. Well, joining me is social media editor Andrew Pelshevsky. So, Andrew, what's trending?
Well, there is a lot of talk about Zimbabwe, whether this is a coup, whether it isn't. A lot of scenes that we're seeing of military vehicles in the streets, hearing reports of gunfire, and questions about where the Mugabes are. Grace Mugabe reportedly out of the country, Robert Mugabe being held under house arrest, but not exactly clear where. Also, as we often see in these cases, there are these little moments that become kind of viral moments. And we had this one military leader who went on TV and said, everything's fine, there's no coup, everything is proceeding. And a lot of people finding some humor in that on social media, saying, well, if a military leader going on TV and saying, this isn't a coup, it's fine, isn't an indication that something is amiss, then that's it's a pretty unusual sight to see a military leader broadcasting from live TV and it not be some kind of coup or government incursion or whatnot. So that has a lot of people talking as well. Also, a lot of people talking here in the U.S. about a shooting yesterday in Tehama County, California, in rural northern California, that left 4 people dead. Scary scene where a man tried to enter a school with elementary school students. The school went on lockdown, so he went elsewhere. But the one thing, in addition to just this story, which is disturbing a lot of people, is the fact that it wasn't widely covered in the media. There was a lot of attention yesterday on Attorney General Jeff Sessions and his testimony on the Capitol Hill in front of the House Judiciary Committee. So a lot of people saying on social media, why wasn't this covered? And for a lot of people, they take this to mean that this is a normal part of U.S. culture, or at least a more normalized part than it has been in the past. And that has a lot of people very disturbed. They said, if we don't have breaking news or cover extensively a shooting like this, does that mean that shootings have just become commonplace? So it is something that is attracting a lot of attention for maybe the wrong reasons.
Yeah, that's terrifying, actually. Yeah. Thanks a lot, Andrew. That's social media editor Andrew Pelshevsky. Here are some of the top news stories that are trending. The U.S. targets al-Shabaab militants in an airstrike. President Trump asks if released U.S. basketball players will thank him for helping to release them. Afghan opium production increases by 87%. And Lebanon's president accuses Saudi Arabia of an act of aggression. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
The first 4 detections of gravitational waves were produced by the mergers of small to medium-sized binary black holes. A new study in the journal Nature Astronomy predicts that within 10 years, scientists will be able to detect more incredibly powerful gravitational waves produced by the merger of 2 supermassive black holes. There are 2 types of black holes, stellar, with masses 10 to 100 times that of the Sun, and supermassive, with millions to billions of solar masses and found in the center of gigantic galaxies. Gravitational waves produced by the medium-sized black hole mergers were detected by LIGO and Virgo scientific collaborations. But the study suggests scientists will have to look for changes in the rhythm of radio wave pulses produced by cosmic objects called pulsars to measure the more powerful gravitational waves. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, Australia moves a step closer towards legalizing gay marriage. U.S. Attorney General Jeff Sessions on Tuesday told members of Congress He rejected accusations. He'd lied to lawmakers when he previously testified he knew of no contacts Donald Trump's election campaign had last year with Russian operatives. Since his last appearance before a congressional panel in mid-October, news surfaced that former Trump campaign aide George Papadopoulos had pleaded guilty earlier in the month to lying to federal agents investigating Trump campaign links to Russia and is cooperating with special counsel Robert Mueller's criminal investigation. Jack Rice is a former CIA officer and criminal defense attorney. He tells International Edition's Lori London his take on the hearing.
If we looked at this in isolation, I would say not that big of a deal. Not really. But the problem is you can't look at it in isolation. What we find now is Jeff Sessions said early on, no contact at all with the Russians, no contact at all with the Russians. And then, of course, we found out that there was lots of contact with the Russians, specifically with the Russian ambassador. And now what we have is one of President Trump's close advisors, as they were talking, not just about Russia, but actually being in contact with Vladimir Putin himself. And the idea that all of a sudden he remembers that, too, sort of brings up this broader question about what they do know versus what they don't and when.
I thought it was interesting that he talked about the specific meeting at Trump Tower that he said he really didn't recall much about, but then he did recall pushing back on the idea of a meeting with Vladimir Putin and President Trump. So it sort of seemed to contradict.
Well, there's a huge contradiction here if you think about this. And again, I think about this as a former prosecutor and as a criminal defense attorney, too, is that when you say, I don't remember anything, the problem is that you don't really have the ability to come back and say, oh, but I remember this, because you either didn't remember it or you did remember it. And if you did remember it and you said you didn't, well, what does that say about your credibility? And if all of a sudden you were being honest about not remembering it, but then magically remembering this one piece, that strikes me as questionable at best. And as a prosecutor, my ears perked up immediately when I heard that point.
He was asked about whether or not he will be looking to potentially appoint another special counsel to investigate Hillary Clinton, not ruling it out. What do you make of that?
I think it's petrifying. It's petrifying because this isn't what the United States is. This is not a left or right question. It truly isn't. But it's petrifying because this is what, in some parts of the world, the new leader does to the old leader, or one person does to the previous administration as a way of cutting them down to increase your own credibility and increase your own power. But what it really does is it undercuts the underpinnings of the stability of a government that sort of rises above the left or the right. And that's exactly what this does.
Right. And it's interesting, too, because the president just about 12 days ago or so said he was really disappointed that he couldn't be involved in the FBI and the Justice Department, that it was a separate entity from the presidency. And he was disappointed because he felt like he didn't understand why they weren't going after his former rival, Hillary Clinton. But as you just said, would that be an abuse of power?
Yes. Yes, it would. And here's the problem, and this is an example of this president fundamentally not understanding how the U.S. government works and, frankly, how the Justice Department works. The Justice Department and the FBI is not essentially a personal bodyguard, a personal investigatory service, and essentially a bunch of jackboots for your liking and for your whims. I mean, that's not what they are. That's not what they're designed to be. They're supposed to rise above the left and the right and do what it is that they do. They don't do what the president wants because the president wants it. Mm-hmm. They uphold the law. That's their job. Their job is to prosecute those who violate crimes and to investigate those issues. But it's not based upon the whim of the president that says, go after the people I hate. That is very Nixonian. And that's something that fundamentally we have to fight against, all of us, left and right.
And the WikiLeaks situation, you know, WikiLeaks was responsible for all of the stolen emails of Hillary Clinton's during the campaign. And we just had new revelations this past week that Donald Trump Jr. had apparently had some correspondence with them.
Yeah, that's astounding as well when you consider that Vice President Pence came out very publicly and said this administration and all of its supporters had no contact of any kind with WikiLeaks. But it actually makes it worse than that, because in this particular case, this is the possibility of WikiLeaks being in contact with Russian operatives to get access to that information and then disclosing it. If that is actually a part of a broader triumvirate between the Russians, WikiLeaks, and the Trump administration, which is what actually is being investigated right now, this ties them one step closer to that issue.
That's former CIA officer, criminal defense attorney Jack Rice. Australians have voted decisively in favor of legalizing same-sex marriage in a landmark postal survey. Almost 62% of those who took part in the non-binding poll favor allowing same-sex couples to wed, according to the Australian Bureau of Statistics. Turnout was about 80%. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
61.6%. This is a historic day for Australia. The emphatic result was greeted with jubilation around the country. Nearly 8 million people, about 62% of those who voted in the postal survey, are demanding that same-sex couples be allowed to marry. The result isn't legally binding, but Australia's centre-right Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull is promising a new same-sex marriage bill within weeks.
They voted overwhelmingly for fairness, for commitment, for love. And now it's our job as the Australian Parliament, all of us here, to get on with it and get this done before Christmas.
The No campaign said gay marriage would threaten religious freedoms and expose children to radical views on homosexuality in the classroom. Opponents of gay marriage say they'll respect the result of the postal survey. Lyle Sheldon from the Anti-Reform Coalition for Marriage has congratulated his rivals for their decisive victory.
This is a democracy and they have been relentless in this, and they have seen the fruit of their relentlessness and their involvement in the political process. That's been rewarded today by this result.
The 8-week postal survey has at times been divisive and toxic, with accusations of bigotry and bullying on both sides of the argument. But for many Yes campaigners, the celebrations are continuing. At an event in Sydney, Robbie, an activist, said it had been an emotional day.
Thank you so much to the people of Australia. One little step of progress. I am so grateful. I am so happy.
The landmark vote comes 20 years after Tasmania became the last remaining Australian state to decriminalise male homosexuality. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
This is VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia, debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter, every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
This is International Edition. A young singer has released a single that's getting a lot of attention. VOA's Border Crossings host Larry London joins me with the latest.
A balladeer whose name is Charlie Puth. And Charlie became famous several years ago for a mega hit, which he recorded for the film Furious 7 as a tribute to the late actor Paul Walker, called See You Again. It was a collaboration between Charlie and Wiz Khalifa. And after that, he followed with his debut solo album, Nine Track Mind, which gave us a couple of big hits, One Call Away, and also Marvin Gaye with Meghan Trainor, and of course, the huge hit, We Don't Talk Anymore with Selena Gomez. And that also sparked a bit of controversy with Charlie and Selena Gomez, because Charlie had a thing for Selena, and Selena didn't have a thing for Charlie.
Oh.
And that story continues to this day, and I'll elaborate a little bit more as we go. But today's brand new song from Charlie Puth is the second single off of his upcoming sophomore album. The album's called Voice Notes. It goes on sale in 2018, and today's song is called How Long?
I'll admit I was wrong. What else can I say, girl? Can't you play my head and not my heart? I was drunk. I was gone. I don't make it right, but promise there were no feelings involved.
So what were you going to say about Charlie Puth then?
Well, I'm glad you asked about Charlie Puth and His past love of Selena Gomez, he worked with her to collaborate on the hit song We Don't Talk Anymore. He admitted he had feelings for her. She never really responded publicly. She got a dog this past year. She named the dog Charlie, although she's been dating The Weeknd until recently, when The Weeknd and Selena broke up, and Selena's now back together with Justin Bieber.
Wow.
Yes, they're back together again.
As the world turns.
As the world turns. What goes around comes around. And Charlie Puth, his name has come up again with regard to Selena Gomez, even though that's been over for a while, because apparently he and Justin Bieber had a tit for tat on social media because Charlie likes Selena. And as we all know, Justin likes Selena and loves Selena. And so it wasn't cool with Justin, so they got into a little war of words on the internet. They've patched things up. In fact, Charlie recently admitted, yes, there has been a handshake, and there's even a possible collaboration down the road between Charlie and Justin. Meanwhile, Charlie has been the opening act for Shawn Mendes on tour. Even Charlie doesn't realize how popular he is. He said, I'm amazed that people come out to see me. He gets on stage, he sings his song. He's a nerd by nature. He grew up a computer guy. He recorded his whole first album in his parents' bedroom on his laptop computer. And that's just kind of the lifestyle that he's resided himself to.
All right, that's Larry London talking about the new release by Charlie Puth called How Long. That's our show. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
As part of the continuing U.S.-Bangladesh partnership dialogue, Undersecretary of State for Political Affairs Thomas Shannon recently met with Bangladeshi Foreign Secretary Shahidul Haq in Dhaka. They discussed further strengthening the U.S.-Bangladesh political, economic, and energy partnership and counterterrorism cooperation. They also discussed the North Korean nuclear threat and U.S. assistance for Rohingya refugees in Bangladesh. During the meeting, Undersecretary Shannon thanked the government of Bangladesh for its generosity in responding to the refugee crisis in Burma's Rakhine State and expressed appreciation for its efforts to ensure assistance reaches the refugees in Bangladesh. More than 600,000 Rohingya have crossed into Bangladesh from Burma's Rakhine State since late August, amid brutal violence by the Burmese military and local vigilantes, acting in concert with the security forces in what the UN has called a textbook example of ethnic cleansing. Simon Henshaw, acting U.S. Assistant Secretary for Population, Refugees, and Migration, recently visited refugees and internally displaced people in Burma and Bangladesh. Henshaw praised Bangladesh's government and its people for supporting the refugees and urged the government of Burma to establish conditions that will allow for the safe, voluntary, and dignified return of refugees to their own home and their own land. Henshaw said, "Responsibility for repatriation lies with the government of Burma. It is responsible for starting up the process and making sure that they are providing the safe and secure area for people to voluntarily return." The United States is deeply concerned over the well-being of those who have fled and has provided nearly $40 million in humanitarian aid for refugees, host communities, and persons internally displaced in response to the Rakhine State crisis since August 25th. This brings the total U.S. humanitarian assistance for displaced persons in Burma and refugees from Burma in the region to nearly $104 million in fiscal year 2017. The United States continues to call on Bangladeshi and Burmese officials to develop a framework for the safe and voluntary return of the Rohingya communities to Burma. The United States urges rapid and complete implementation of the Annan Commission's recommendations, including urgent provision of humanitarian and media access throughout Rakhine State and ensuring accountability for perpetrators of human rights violations, with a view towards creating conditions for long-term peace and development in Rakhine State.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.